From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Vampire Cat. Mr. Everard Meynell, who told the following story in a letter to Lord Halifax, was the latter's nephew, being the son of his brother, the Honorable Frederick Wood, who changed his name to Meynell on succeeding to the estate at Horcross. The following was a true story. I really must tell you of a most extraordinary story, which I have just this moment heard and am putting into writing at once before I forget any of the details. I was sitting in my club after dinner, smoking a cigarette and drinking my coffee, when a friend of mine, whom I had not seen for some time, came up and began to talk to me on various subjects. At length he said that he had just experienced a most singular adventure. It appears that last Sunday he went down to Eastbourne to stay with some friends for the weekend, hoping to get a little fresh air and recuperate generally after a period of somewhat severe work, during which he had been suffering a good deal from sleeplessness. On the Saturday evening, when he arrived, he found a cheerful party in the house and was congratulating himself upon having been able to get away from London. Before going up to dress for dinner, his attention was attracted by the behavior of a large black cat, which rushed forward to meet him as he came into the hall and began to display violent signs of affection, rubbing itself against his leg and trying to climb up to his shoulder. This struck my friend as being most odd, and in a way that he could hardly explain rather repulsive, as he had always had an irrational repugnance for cats. However, as the animal seemed to be entirely devoted to him, he allowed it to follow him upstairs, but on reaching his bedroom shut the door against it. When he went down to dinner, the cat was still outside the door and followed him into the dining room, where its apparent devotion was the subject of much chafe. The same performance was repeated at bedtime, when again he saw to it that the cat was left outside the door of his room. During the whole of Sunday the cat continued to behave in this strange way, making almost desperate attempts to climb up to my friend's neck. On Sunday evening, when he went to bed, he had forcibly to prevent the cat from following him into his room. Benefiting doubtless by the sea air and the quiet surroundings, he at once fell into a deep and dreamless sleep, a thing which he had not been able to do for many weeks. He was awakened very gradually by a curious drawn feeling down one side of him. In his own words, he felt as though he was breathing only on one side of his body. At the same time, he had a feeling of faintness and languor which tempted him to turn over and go off to sleep again, but a sharp pricking sensation over his heart caused him to place his hand to his side, where he felt something warm and furry. He started up and found the cat pressed closely against him, with its head buried under his arm, and the whole of one side of his nightshirt drenched with blood. He sprang out of bed and said something to the cat, which at once stopped purring, came to the end of the bed, and began to spit and curse at him with a hatred which more than equaled its previous affection. Needless to say, it was the work of a moment to throw the creature out of the room. Subsequent inquiries explained how the cat had got in. My friend had given instructions to be called early, as he wished to catch a train. The footman, however, mistaking the time, had come to his bedroom an hour too soon, at 6 o'clock instead of at 7, and when opening the door he remembered having let the cat in and having been unable to chase it out again. It was 7:30 when my friend awoke, so the cat had had about an hour and a half uninterrupted in which time it had managed to suck quite a quantity of blood. An extraordinary circumstance was that, although it had drawn so much blood, it must have had to lick through the nightshirt. All the skin on the left side of my friend's body was furrowed up and down, leaving exact marks of the animal's tongue. It was an extremely unpleasant experience, and the cat's immediate discovery of some horrible affinity between it and my friend makes the story the more ghastly. When my friend returned to London, he consulted two doctors, who were able to reassure him that the wound was perfectly healthy, and to dispel any fears that he might have of the sanity of cats. The Monk of Bolton Abbey. The following is a true story related by the Marquis of Hartington when he was a boy at Eton. He sent Lord Halifax this account of a ghost that he had seen at Bolton Abbey, the property of his father, the Duke of Devonshire. The experience befell him in August of 1912, when he was staying at the Abbey for shooting. On Sunday, August 8, 1912, on going up to my room at the rectory at 11:15 p.m., I distinctly saw a figure standing at the door. It was dressed in nondescript clothes and was more or less clean-shaven. I was at the top of the staircase, looking down the passage in which mine was the end room. I went downstairs again and fetched another light, but on going up again, the figure had disappeared. The ghost had been the subject of a conversation that evening at which I had not been present, and I was not thinking of it. Later on, Lord Halifax received a separate note from the Duchess of Devonshire, which he directed to Lady Halifax. "Will you tell Lord Halifax that Lord Hartington will send him an account of his ghost? He seems to be the same man who was seen two or three times by the vicar, but the vicar's ghost wore a brown dress, and Eddie declares this man was dark gray or black. Eddie's ghost had a round face, no beard, but what he described as a rough face. When we asked the vicar afterwards if his ghost had a beard, he said no, but that he looked as if he had not shaved for 4 or 5 days, and his face was very round." The following is the letter sent from the Marquis of Hartington to Lord Halifax. "I saw the ghost standing in the door of my room, looking not at me but past me, at 11:15 p.m. on Sunday, August 18th. I was sleeping at the rectory and saw him when I turned left-handed from the stairs, which are in three flights, and looked down the passage some 11 yards long, at the end of which is the door of my room. While I was going up the last flight, which consists only of 6 steps, I thought someone was there, but attached no importance to this, as the rector often met me on the stairs. I thought at once that it was the ghost, but was not frightened of him until afterwards. He was below the middle height, and seemed to be an old man of 65 or so. His face was unusually round, or rather broad in proportion to its length, and was very heavily lined and wrinkled. The eyes were bright, and the face might have been that of an old woman, but for the fact that there was about a week's growth of grayish stubble on the chin. There was a hood cover over the head, and he was dressed in a long garment like a dressing gown. The hood and shoulders seemed to be gray, but lower down the color was black or brown. The light was behind me, and I had a candle in my hand, so that his head and shoulders were fairly brightly lighted, while lower down he was in shadow. I looked at him for a second or two, and then went down to fetch the rector from his study. He was, however, not there, and taking the lantern with which I had come across from the house, I went upstairs again, but the figure had gone. I had heard of the ghost before, but this was the account I gave of him before I heard any description whatever of him. I was not thinking of the ghost when I saw him, but he was being discussed in the house at the moment. There was no question of his being transparent. He was as solid as any actual man. The wall of my room is the old monastery wall, and is 7 feet thick. The habit of the monastery was not brown but white, so that he was certainly not a monk of Bolton Abbey. The footsteps at Haverholme Priory. The following is another true ghost story, contributed by Mr. H. W. Hill to Lord Halifax. On Friday, July 14, 1905, I went on a visit to Haverholme Priory near Slayford in Lincolnshire. The priory is a property of the Winchelseys, who inherited it about 80 years ago. The tenants with whom I was staying were my old friends, the Hitchcocks. I dined on the train and got out at Haverholme some time after 9 o'clock. It was very hot, and I went to bed just before midnight. Mr. Hitchcock accompanied me to my room, which I observed was in an old part of the house, apparently on the first floor of the tower, and having a separate entrance from the hall near the front door. Mr. Hitchcock stayed chatting with me for a little time, and I then undressed. Before getting into bed, I drew aside the blinds and opened the window, which looked out onto a large expanse of park. After I had been in bed for about 10 minutes and was still wide awake, I heard someone walking up and down on the graveled path underneath the window. I thought it was probably one of the servants, and the circumstance made no particular impression on me. In the morning, I asked the son of the house, Hal Hitchcock, if I had been the last to go to bed, and he said that this was so, and that he had heard his father leave my room and go to his own. I then asked him where the men servants slept, and he told me that they were all on the other side of the house. In reply to a further question, he assured me that when the doors were shut for the night, nobody could get out. The next day, which was a Saturday, I spent in Lincoln, where I had an engagement to address a meeting of the English Church Union. In the evening, I took in to dinner Miss Susan Antrobus, who had been associated with Miss Florence Nightingale in nursing, and was the foundress of the St. Barnabas Guild of Nurses. I asked her to tell me about Haverholme, and she mentioned that it was built on the site of a Gilbertine priory. I remarked how stupid it was of me not to have remembered that, as it now came back to me that the priory was the very place where St. Thomas a Becket hid himself for a couple of days after the council at Northampton. She added that the modern interest in the house came from the fact that it was de Chesney Wold of Bleak House, and pointing to that side of the house which contained my bedroom, she added that the ghost walk ran along by it, and that footsteps were sometimes heard. It was quite clear to me that in my mind these must have been the steps which had disturbed me the previous night. I paid another visit to Haverholme in September 1906, during some very hot weather. On the evening of Saturday, the 8th, I asked who would be going out early to church on the following morning. The nearest church was an early celebration of Holy Communion, being at Amwick on Lord Bristol's property, about half a mile away. I made this inquiry so that I should not occupy a seat in a carriage which might be wanted for someone else. Eventually it was settled that Mr. Hitchcock and some of the ladies would drive to church. I said I would get up early and walk there, while another guest, Mr. Cyril Cobb, later chairman of the London Country Council, proposed to ride to church on his bicycle. When Sunday morning came, I was down by 7 o'clock and found Mr. Cobb already up and attending to his bicycle. The weather was intensely hot, without a breath of wind. Mr. Cobb remarked that I was wise to allow myself plenty of time on such a morning, but that as he was going to bicycle, he would not be starting for a while. I set off, walking through the inner grounds and crossing the bridge over the river Slee, which runs through the park. I was then in the long avenue with elms on either side. On approaching the bridge, which passes over Ruskington Beck, I heard behind me a very loud and fierce whizzing noise. At first I thought this must be Cobb riding furiously, and without turning around, I called out to him and asked him why he had made such an early start and why he was in such a hurry. No answer came, and although I could see nothing, The whizzing noise seemed to go past me and to disappear in the distance. In the evening, I went with Mr. Hitchcock in the carriage to Evedon Church on the Haverholm property. After the service, having told Mr. Hitchcock beforehand of my experience in the morning, I asked the rector some questions. He had been tutor to the late Lord Winchelsea and his brother, and probably knew more about the place than anybody else. He told me that the Long Avenue had a bad name, and that when he had occasion to visit the priory at night, he neither went nor returned by it. There was, he said, a tradition that the avenue was haunted by a Gilbertine canoness at the point where she was reputed to have been seen by a particular tree near the bridge over Ruskington Beck. I was at Haverholm once more in the late summer of 1907, and one evening, while I was there, Mrs. Hitchcock went out for a little walk with her maid and one of her dogs, an Aberdeen Terrier. They went down the Long Avenue. Mrs. Hitchcock and the maid neither saw nor heard anything, but just before they reached the bridge in the avenue, the dogs set up a most pitiful howling and tore back to the house in terror. On returning, they had great difficulty in finding him, as he had hidden himself away and for some time refused to come out.